Well, debated whether to give this message first while the young people were here, and I had already given the messages, the list to the brothers back in June, and so I thought I'd just go with the order that was printed up. It was the first day of summer, and 12-year-old Andy Dimwit was hoping to get a summer job. He had just finished school, and he was hoping, okay, I'm going to earn some money this summer. And his father worked for a real estate company, Applegate Realty, selling houses and other properties. Now, many of these properties that they sold were... Yeah, any others who would like to move up, feel free. You're still... The invitation is still open if you'd like to do that. Okay. So anyway, Andy Dimwit, 12 years old, okay? Just starting summer. And his dad worked for a real estate company. A lot of the properties they sold were vacant. And so the grass would grow up during the summer, and they needed someone who would cut those yards. Well, when his father came home for lunch, Andy was sitting there reading a book, and his dad said, "Oh, guess what, Andy? Got good news for you." And Andy said, "Oh, what's that?" His dad said, "Well, I told Mr. Applegate that you were free for the summer. We're looking for a summer job. And as you know, we have all of these properties that are vacant, and we need someone to mow the yards during the summer." And Andy said, "Oh, good. He's going to hire me to do that." And his dad said, "Well, he wants to start you off with one. We have one right now that needs to get mowed today. And if you do a good job with that, then he's thinking he'll go ahead and give you the job for the whole summer." And he said, "Oh, thank you so much. Dad, I really appreciate this. And how much will it pay?" And he said, "Well, this yard, it should only take you a couple hours. It'll pay 50 euros. Normally I give this in the U.S., it's $50. I don't know if 50 euros is a good price here or not." So Andy said, "Well, that sounds great." And he said, "I'm going to start getting dressed right now." So he ran upstairs, got in his work clothes. They had lunch together, and then at 1, his dad left for work. Andy's mom had already gone to run some errands. And Andy started out the door to go mow the yard. It was just a block away. His dad had given him the address of where to go. And he was going to get on it right away. His dad had said that there was a family interested in looking at that house later that day. He wasn't sure when. It would probably be 6 o'clock that evening, but it might be as early as 4. And so Andy had decided, "I better just get on it, you know, as soon as lunch is over and get it done with." So he was heading out the door, and just then he noticed his best friend Tommy coming up the sidewalk with a group of other boys. And Andy said hi to them. They said, "Oh, what's happening?" He said, "Well, I got to go mow a yard." And they said, "Oh, no, we were looking forward to playing Monopoly." Do all of you know what Monopoly is, the game Monopoly? Okay, something I grew up with, played a lot as a boy, played a lot with my children. And they said, "How long is it going to take you to mow this yard?" And he said, "Well, probably just a couple of hours." They said, "Well, do you have time for just one short game?" And he said, I guess we could squeeze in one short game. My dad probably won't show the property till 6 this evening." So they all went inside and spread out on the living room floor. And one of the boys said, "Hey, I'll be banker." And they got all the property set up and started playing. Well, Andy, feeling very conscientious about this first job, kept watching the clock, and the time went by. And finally, at 2 o'clock, he said, "Look, hey, I'm sorry, fellas, I've got to go. It's 2 o'clock. I want to get this job done, and I hate to leave in the middle of the game, but that's it, you know." And they all looked at him and, "Andy, you can't do that. That's not fair. We're right in the middle. The game is just getting excited. You can't just walk out on us right now." And, well, Andy said, well, look, I've got a job to do. And they kept pleading with him. He said, well, all right, maybe a half hour more, but if it's not over by then, I've got to leave. Well, so they kept playing. Well, a half hour came, and the game was still going. But Andy was doing pretty good. He had picked up Boardwalk in Park Place and had three of the railroads, and so he was getting pretty engrossed in the game. And so, yeah, he just kept playing. He didn't notice the time, and pretty soon 3 o'clock rolled around, and they were still in the game, and then 3:30. By now, there was just three of them left, and Andy was in the lead. He was feeling pretty good. 4 o'clock rolled around, just him and another boy, but the game still kept, you know how Monopoly is, it can just go on and go on and go on. And suddenly the door burst open, and Andy looked up, and it was his dad, and his dad was glaring at him, and Andy looked at the clock, and oh no, it's 4:30. He said, oh, don't worry, Dad, I'm going to leave right now, I'll get that mowed by 6, don't worry. His dad said, Andy, I'm afraid it's too late. So the people decided to look at it at 4, and the overgrown yard did not make a very good impression, and the couple decided they weren't going to buy the house. And he said, oh, Dad, I am so sorry. It will not happen again. Don't worry. Next time, I will be there, Johnny on the spot. And his dad said, Andy, I hate to tell you, but there's not going to be a next time. When Mr. Applegate heard what had happened, he decided he would give the summer job to his nephew. And looking at Andy, he said, you know, because of a silly Monopoly game, you lost the chance to earn some real money this summer. And Andy said, what do you mean a silly game? He said, Dad, I won $8,000. And I own Boardwalk in Park Place. And that's where the story ends. Well, you're probably thinking Andy Dimwit deserves his name. He is somewhat of a dimwit. And you'd think probably, well, yeah, what does that have to do with me? I would never be that dumb to do something like that. But, you know, the truth is most of us are Andy Dimwits. We have a real job to do here on the earth, a real job, one that involves eternity. And most professing Christians are too wrapped up in earning Monopoly money to pay much attention to it. They're wrapped up in their careers, in their jobs, and in most churches that's just real fine. But it's not fine with Jesus Christ. Turn with me to Luke chapter 19. Told you we're going to be looking at a number of Jesus' teachings this weekend. I want to start with this one, Luke 19. And we'll start with verse 12. Okay, Luke 19, beginning with verse 12. I'm reading from the New King James. It says, therefore he, talking about Jesus, said, a certain nobleman went into a far country to receive for himself a kingdom and to return. I think you can all understand who that is. The nobleman is Jesus Christ when he returned to heaven. Anyway, so he called 10 of his servants, delivered to them 10 minas, and said to them, do business till I come. But his citizens hated him and sent a delegation after him saying, we will not have this man to reign over us. And so it was that when he returned, having received the kingdom, he then commanded these servants to whom he had given the money to be called to him, that he might know how much every man had gained by trading. Then came the first, saying, Master, your mina has earned 10 minas. And he said to him, well done, good servant. because you were faithful in a very little, have authority over 10 cities. And the second came, saying, Master, your mina has earned 5 minas. Likewise, he said to him, You also be over 5 cities. Then another came, saying, Master, here is your mina, which I've kept put away in a handkerchief. For I feared you, because you are an austere man. You collect what you did not deposit and reap what you did not sow. And he said to him, Out of your own mouth I will judge you, you wicked servant. You knew that I was an austere man, collecting what I did not deposit and reaping what I did not sow. Why then did you not put my money in the bank, that at my coming I might have collected it with interest? And he said to those who stood by, Take the mina from him and give it to him who has 10 minas. But they said to him, Master, he has 10 minas. For I say to you that to everyone who has will be given, and from him who does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. But bring here those enemies of mine who did not want me to reign over them, and slay them before me. So Jesus has given us work to do. When he returned to heaven, it wasn't that, oh, we're supposed to just carry on, get involved in the world, spend our time trying to do what we can in this system here on earth. But he wants us to be busy in the kingdom. Obviously, as parents, we have families, and that's our first kingdom assignment, is to take care of our families, to provide for them, to give them training and that sort of thing. But yeah, not to make it our goal to see how prosperous we can be in this world. It's easy to slip into that. And so the question we should be asking ourselves is, am I doing kingdom business until Christ returns? Or what am I doing with my life? Am I primarily wrapped up in business? Where do I spend most of my time? Where does my energy and focus go in life? Or if you're a homemaker, yeah, is my life devoted to the service of Jesus? And again, raising children is part of that. Or am I largely wrapped up in possessions and things and my house and how it looks and you know, garden or whatever? And I have little time for things for Jesus Christ. What most people don't grasp is that the instant we die, all of the money that we've accumulated here on the earth turns into monopoly money. The instant we die. I mean, it's really that now, but at least serves a purpose right now on the earth. But the instant we die, as far as our life is concerned, that's it. It's monopoly money. It might do some good to those left behind, but it's of no use whatsoever to us. It's worth no more than the monopoly money that Andy Dimwit had. And yet, so many Christians, that's where their focus is. It's not on the real work. Just like Andy was so caught up in his monopoly game that he didn't do any of the work that he was supposed to do. And we can be the same way. The instant we die, our houses turn into these little green monopoly houses. I mean, that's all they are. They are of some use to the people we leave behind. But to us, I mean, that's it. It has no more value in eternity. It is gone. You know, the car we have becomes one of those little monopoly, one of those little tiny metal cars, or maybe nowadays are made out of plastic. And that's it. All of this is just an illusion. And so the question is, yeah, when Jesus returns, or on Judgment Day, if we die before he returns, yeah, what are we going to be able to say with the minas that he has given us? He's entrusted all of us with kingdom interests, with something that we can do for his kingdom. No matter who we are, there are things that we can do. In addition to just caring for our children, as important as that is. But helping our neighbor, helping perhaps a single mother who's struggling to raise children and is trying to do what she can, the best that she can. Helping orphans, helping children from divorced families who may be being raised by a single mother or by a single father, by foster parents, by grandparents, whatever. We can reach out and do things for them. That's kingdom work. We can be sharing the gospel with other people. Teaching. I mean, there are so many different ways to be serving Christ while we're here on the earth. And that's what he's expecting. He doesn't fully explain what it means to earn 10 minas or 5 minas. I don't think we have to understand that. The point is, we're supposed to be doing something. And when he comes back, or when we meet him on Judgment Day, I mean, it's going to be very sad news if all we can say is, hey, here's your mina back that you gave me. I didn't do anything for you, but at least here it is. You can have it back. Or to say, well, here's a bunch of all the Monopoly money I earned when I was on the earth. Do you want this? Is this going to do you any good? No, I think that's going to be very sad. And so it's important that right now that we make sure whatever abilities Christ has given us, whatever we can do with our resources, that we invest that in the kingdom of God. Again, it's not enough. This is, you know, family weekend and a family seminar. But as parents, it's not enough just to do a good job of raising our children. That is, again, that is a kingdom calling. And that is important that we do that. But that's not all the work that we should be doing in the kingdom. It's just that we raised a godly family. As important as that is. But we need to reach out beyond that. And who else can we be helping? And it doesn't have to be any grand thing. I mean, you know, some of you have made big steps, have, you know, left the United States, have come here and, you know, working in different ways, you know, with the boys' home or helping the church here and all that. So I kind of feel like I'm preaching to the choir in some ways. But like I say, even if it's just helping an elderly neighbor, and I shouldn't say even, I mean, to Jesus, that means a lot. It's, yeah, whatever our resources, whatever that we're able to do. But if we're so wrapped up in our businesses, if we're so wrapped up in the everyday cares of life, we have no time for that. We're like that servant. We may look at him and say, well, I would never do that. But that's what we're doing. We're basically saying, here's your mina back. I had no time for you, but you can have it back. He doesn't want it back. He wants some kind of earnings that we have done for him, something for the kingdom. Not that he needs us to do that. Christ could have done all the work to start with, but it's a privilege. He's given us that privilege that we can be fellow workers in the kingdom. And if we choose to treat that privilege like it's a bother and we don't want it, well, yeah, we're not very suited for his kingdom. Well, let's get back to our story. You know, Andy never did find a summer job. You know, he blew his opportunity. So he ended up spending every day playing Monopoly with his friends. Well, one day his father came home unexpectedly in the middle of the afternoon. And, you know, Andy was a little bit startled. He thought maybe he was in trouble or something. But he wasn't. His dad had a big smile on his face. And he said, Andy, you're not going to believe this. And Andy said, yeah, what? And his dad said, well, I was talking to Mr. Applegate this morning. And he was asking what you're doing with your summer. This was about a month into the summer. And I told him, well, you and your friends get together in the afternoons and play Monopoly. And Andy said, and I bet he disapproves, right? His dad said, no, that's not what this is about. This is what Mr. Applegate said. He said, now, you're not going to believe this, but he said, I want you to go home right now and see where your son is in the middle of his Monopoly game and find out how much money he has, how much Monopoly money, and how many assets he has that he can liquefy. And I will give him €1 per Monopoly dollar. I will give him real money, real euros, for his Monopoly money. 1 euro for one Monopoly dollar. And Andy said, what? He's going to give me real money for Monopoly money? Why would he do that? That's crazy. And his dad said, I don't know why. I asked him, you know, why he's doing it. And he said, I have my reasons. That's all he said. But I said, now, is this a joke? And he said, no, this is real. I will give him real euros for whatever Monopoly money he has. And Andy was just in disbelief. And but his dad said, so count up your money real fast. So, you know, Andy started counting, you know, and he said, okay, I've got $4,160 or euros in Monopoly money. His dad said, okay, great. He's going to give you 4,160 euros. Andy's like, wow. And his dad said, okay, how many houses do you have? You can sell them back to the bank. Andy said, sell them back to the bank? Dad, you maybe have forgotten the rules in Monopoly. If you sell them back to the bank, you only get half of whatever you paid for them. He said, I'm ahead right now in the game. It looks like for the first time in weeks, I'm going to win. I've got the yellow Monopoly. I've got four houses on each property. I mean, the people have to pay like $1,000 if they land on it, you know. But if I sell these back, I only get half their value. And then I miss all that rent. If someone lands on my property, they don't have to pay $1,000. They'll pay, you know, $40 or $30 or something like that. Dad, I could lose the game. His dad said, Andy, what are you talking about? We're talking about real money here. Mr. Applegate will give you real euros for your Monopoly money. What are you talking about losing the game? Well, Andy fussed, but he could tell his dad was really serious. So he said, all right, well, what if I do this? Let's suppose I go ahead and take him up on his offer. He said, do I get the euros this afternoon? His dad said, well, no, this was the one condition. You have to give him your Monopoly money this afternoon, but he will give you the euros at the end of summer, 2 months from now. And he said, what? Who ever heard of a ridiculous offer like that? I'd be a total fool to take him up on that. 2 whole months I have to wait? And his friends all did the same thing. Boy, what a dumb offer. Who on earth would ever accept an offer like that? And so Andy rejected the offer. He didn't get the euros. But you will be happy to know he won the Monopoly game that day. So good for Andy, huh? Well, you're probably thinking, David, that story's more absurd than the first one. Nobody would be that dumb. Well, actually, most people are. Because Jesus has offered to give us real money, eternal money, in exchange for the Monopoly money that we earn here on the earth. And most Christians, nope, they'd rather have the Monopoly money. The real money just doesn't seem as attractive. Let me explain a little bit more. Turn with me in your Bibles. Back, if you're still in Luke chapter 16. Luke 16. And we're going to look at verses 1 through 13. This is a parable that gets ignored an awful lot. I don't hear very many messages on it. It's one I noticed the early Christians talk about quite a bit. Let's read. It says, he also said to his disciples, there was a certain rich man who had a steward, and an accusation was brought to him that this man was wasting his goods. So he called him and said to him, what is this I hear about you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you can no longer be steward. Then the steward said within himself, what shall I do? For my master is taking the stewardship away from me. Stewardship was you were in charge over a bunch of other servants. I cannot dig. I'm ashamed to beg. I've resolved what to do. that when I'm put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. So he called every one of his master's debtors to him and said to the first, how much do you owe my master? And he said, 100 measures of oil. So he said to him, take your bill and sit down quickly and write 50. Then he said to another, and how much do you owe? So he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, take your bill and write 80. So the master commended the unjust steward because he had dealt shrewdly. For the sons of this world are more shrewd in their generation than the sons of light. And I say to you, make friends for yourself by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much, and he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will be loyal to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve God and mammon. Okay, now this, the parable, it sounds strange when you read it. It's like, okay, wait a minute. This guy goes out and cheats his master, and his master is pleased with him. It just doesn't seem sensible. And yet Jesus is trying to explain the reality of things and how generous our Heavenly Father is. The point of it is this man goes out, and he's about to be fired. So he takes his master's money, and he's very generous with money that's not his, okay? He takes his master's money, and he makes friends with it. You know, Wendell here owes 100 measures of wheat, and he says, you know, write 80 on there, you know? So you'll only have to pay my master 80. And another one, it was 50 measures of oil, I think, and yeah, we'll write on there, you know, 50. So he's thinking, okay, when I get fired by my master, yeah, I've got these friends, these people, I've made friends with my master's money. And of course, in the monopoly world, yeah, that would, you'd be in trouble for doing something like that. But Jesus is saying, this is how the real world, how reality works, okay? Everything we have here on the earth is God's. I mean, we may think, yeah, I worked hard, I earned this money, and I bought this house with my own labor, and all of that is true, but you are only able to do that because you were using God's money to do it. His resources. I mean, He created the earth, He created the air, He gives us the sun, that every bit of energy that we have, whether we get it from oil or from solar or wind or whatever, ultimately, the source is the sun, that all energy comes from here on the earth, other than, I guess, nuclear energy. And that's from God as well. And so all of this is really God's money, okay, that He's entrusted with us. Everything that we've earned is ultimately from God. Without His resources, there would be no companies here on the earth. There would be no businesses. There would be no farming. There would be no nothing if God hadn't made all these resources available to us free. I mean, we can go out and we buy the land from another human, but that human didn't create it. It came ultimately from God, and God doesn't charge us anything for it. It's, you know, he gives us all of this out here to use. Now, we can be like this shrewd steward who, like, okay, I'm going to take my master's goods and I'm going to make friends for myself with him, which is what he did. And his master was pleased with him because it's like, wow, this was brilliant what you did. What Jesus is telling us is we can do the same thing. We can take this monopoly money that we earn here on the earth. Okay? We get paid monopoly money. It seems like real money while you're here, and we all need monopoly money to, you know, to eat and to have a place to live. But that's all it is. It's not real money here on the earth. And it all came from God. Now, we can take this monopoly money and we can turn it into eternal money. Okay? How do we do that? All right, let's say you have $5,000, okay, that you earned. You could buy a boat, maybe a used boat with that money. Not saying there's anything wrong with that, okay? You can use $5,000 of Monopoly money to buy a Monopoly boat, because that's all it's going to be when you die, a little metal piece of Monopoly, okay? Or you can take that $5,000 and turn it into real money. You do that by, let's say, for $5,000 in a developing country, you can save someone's life with medical care. You might be able to save several persons' lives. I know, like Cam, $5,000, I don't know how many packages of medicine. Do you remember how many that would buy? Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. For $5,000, you could deliver enough medicine to a undeveloped country to you know, possibly save, you know, 100 lives with that, okay? Or you might be able to sustain a widow for the rest of her life. $5,000 doesn't, or 5,000 euros, I'm sorry, if I switch back to dollars, it's hard to get out of the habit. Doesn't go that far, you know, in the United States or in Ireland. I mean, it's a substantial amount. But, boy, in an underdeveloped country, it can do wonders how far money goes in countries like that. You could put a number of students through high school. A lot of high schools are not free in developing countries. And so children have to drop out. Poor children, because their parents don't have the money to send them to high school. And yet maybe the high school only costs, you know, $300 a year or something like that. Too much money for their parents. But yeah, for $5,000 you could send, you know, how many would that be? 30 students or whatever, 25 students to high school, you know? And then they're going to be able to, the rest of their lives, earn more money, provide for their children better, be able to send their children to high school, and it just keeps going on and on and on. What you can do in God's kingdom with this money. And Jesus, what he's saying here is, when you fail, which all of us are, that these people will take you in. You have made eternal friends. They may be lost people. They may not even themselves go to heaven, but your reward will still be there, okay? That you've made eternal friends with money that wasn't even yours. Ultimately, it was from God. And yet God is letting you take his resources, and you go out and you give it to this poor widow or orphan or whoever, and God is pleased with you that you've taken his resources and you've made friends for yourself with his resources. And he's saying, hey, that's pretty shrewd. I like that, you know, and I want you in heaven with me. You're the kind of guy who can appreciate eternal things. God has no use for an Andy Dimwit, you know. He doesn't want to spend eternity with Andy Dimwit, who, you know, would rather have Monopoly money than real money. And he doesn't have much use for people here who can't see the reality. And in case you think that it's just a simple thing, let's go back to what Jesus says there at the end of that parable. We'll look at verse 9 again. He says, "And I say to you, make friends for yourselves by unrighteous mammon, that when you fail, they may receive you into an everlasting home. He who is faithful in what is least is faithful also in much." He's talking here about the Monopoly money we have here on the earth. If you're faithful in this, is faithful in much. And he who is unjust in what is least is unjust also in much. Therefore, if you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? And if you have not been faithful in what is another man's, who will give you what is your own? So he's saying, if you can't take God's resources that aren't even yours, and you can't even use money that's not yours in an eternal way here on the earth, well, he's not going to give you eternal money. Because you've already shown that in what is least, in this Monopoly money, you can't make good use of it. So he's not going to trust you with the true money. If you can't be faithful in what somebody else's, yeah, he's not going to give you something that's your own. We need to realize everything we have here on the earth, and not to just to say this in a way of, oh, well, this, none of this is mine. That only is meaningful if you truly treat it like it's not yours. But yeah, a lot of Christians say that, oh yeah, they'll point to their house and their car, oh yeah, none of this is mine. But yeah, if you ask them to share it with somebody else, you find out it is theirs, you know. So yeah, we don't want to, just be saying, you know, nice sayings. I mean, the reality is, yeah, is it ours? Are we willing to, what is it that we are willing to share with others? And if we're not willing to share any of it, or just a tiny little bit, when we have an abundance, he said, if you're not just, if you're unjust in the what isn't real, that is, you hoard it for yourself, you're not going to share it with those who have greater need, then, yeah, he has no use for you in heaven. You're not somebody who appreciates true things. You're in love with monopoly money here on the earth. There's a weeding out process once we're saved. We can't buy our way into heaven. We can't earn our salvation. It's not that. But we're not going to be in heaven if we don't love God with our whole heart, mind, and soul, and our neighbor as ourselves. The greatest of all qualities is love. It's greater than faith, even, Paul tells us. And if we don't love our fellow man enough that we're willing not just to give out of things that don't hurt, but to give out of things that, yeah, we would really rather have that boat, or yeah, there's something that we'd like to have, and no, I'll sacrifice that. I want to give this money to somebody who can use it more. It may not be someone we'll ever see. You know, when you give money to Cam, do all of you know what Cam is when I say that? Nobody knows. What? Raise your hand high. Okay. All right, some of you don't. So it's Christian Aid Ministries. I'm not plugging it. There are other, you know, charitable work that's done. I just mentioned it because so little of it goes to overhead when you give money to them. 95% of it or so goes to the people in need. And it's something my wife and I have been supporting from way back in the 80s. It was called Christian Aid to Romania then. Yeah, I don't think I've ever met one of the people who's ever received that money. I don't mean that people haven't received it. I've just never met them, you know. But these are people that I may get to know in eternity. In other words, yeah, there's no gratification in that. Oh, it feels nice when you can give it to somebody you see. And there's nothing wrong with doing that. I'm not discouraging that by any means. But I'm just saying, you know, often it's someone, yeah, who doesn't even know, and in this case, they don't know who gave the money. And that's fine. That's all the better with God when it's given that way. But, we all have that opportunity to convert monopoly money into eternal money, and we have the opportunity not to. Okay. Any questions? Thing you didn't like about Jesus's parable? I'm glad you asked it, because I meant to explain it a little bit more. I wasn't saying it's wrong to buy a recreational boat, you know. It's a decision that you have to make, you know, before God. But he doesn't require us to live an ascetic life, but we can, you know, if we do it out of love. You know, I mean, there's no point in any of this. As Paul said, you know, if I give everything I have to the poor but don't have love, it profits me nothing. You know, so, I mean, the motivation has to be our love for our fellow man and our love for Jesus Christ. So it would be, I would hate to have like a rule, oh, you can't buy something that's not a necessity. We wouldn't be doing it out of love. And I think, I mean, we have a generous master. I don't think he, you know, says we can't do things that are just enjoyment. We can't eat food that, you know, other than beans and rice or something that would sustain us. Now, it's fine if a Christian voluntarily wants to do that, can do it without being self-righteous about it and all of that. I mean, there are Christians who've done that, you know, and that's commendable. Yeah, there are no rules. I mean, Jesus leaves it up to us. How do we want to spend our money? And I'm sure I will no doubt answer for things that I've spent it on that I didn't, you know, I could have spent it more wisely, but he totally leaves it up to us what we want to do. But if we don't convert any of it, you know, is the point, then yeah, we're really Andy Dimwitz, you know, and, we can convert most of it. We can convert part. He leaves it totally up to us. You know, it's what's a necessity and what's whatever. I don't know. In the United States, I mean, almost nothing probably I spend money on is a necessity, or it's stuff that at least, you know, I go to Honduras twice a year and so much of what my money goes to the United States would be considered a luxury in Honduras. You know, they wouldn't look at, I mean, a refrigerator is not a necessity there, you know. And, you know, we would probably tend to look at it as a necessity, you know.